So you had they did eventually break the group up. Although the Crests were singing background on some of your solo stuff, right? Model Girl,
well,
and things like that.
Actually, they were not the Crests. The record company used the name because no one owned it at that point. But they were not the Crests. They were studio singers.
Because on a couple of those solo records, it seems to have a male group or male and partly female group behind you. And then Mr. Happiness comes on and you have a full female group backing you up.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they were just
studio singers, yes.
Mm.
Yeah, on the on 16 Candles, there were three girls also augmenting what we did. They were called the Miller Sisters.
Any story behind how you came to record The Angels Listened In?
Let's see. Well, actually, that was our first attempt at an up-tempo song. All the releases before that were all ballads. And the company decided they wanted to try something a little up-tempo. And Angel Listen In was the one, and it was a good song. We were a little apprehensive about recording that, you know, being a ballad group up to that point. But it did well for us, and I'm glad we did it.
Mm. And some of your best numbers to this day are up-tempo numbers.
Well, Step by Step, Trouble in Paradise.
And Isn't It Amazing?
Isn't it amazing?
It Must Be Love. My favorite.
Yeah.
So after the solo career, you had a couple of chart hits as a solo singer, but that died away. Did it die away because you just were fed up with the situation? You left the label, or did the label dismiss you?
Well, I did leave the label. I was not happy with the material that they were giving me. I wasn't happy with how they were handling my career at that point. And I wasn't happy being a solo artist. I really enjoyed having a group. So I put together a band rather than a vocal group, a band with musicians who could sing. And then I started traveling around the country that way.
And what were they called at the time? The first band.
I believe the first band was called The Holidays.
Mm-hmm. Not Johnny Maestro and The Holidays?
With my name in front, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you recorded for several record labels before landing at Buddha.
Yes, I did. And I have no recollection of which ones they were.
The 60s were a dark time, Johnny.
They say if you remember them, then you really didn't experience it. Well, that wasn't the reason. There were so many labels. Just kept hopping back and forth.
Sure. How did you land at Buddha?
Before Buddha, I was with the Del Satin for about a year. We were traveling around with a guitar player and a drummer. I think it was
Dion's former backup singers.
Well, yes, they were the guys who did all the voices for his records as a solo artist.
Mm-hmm.
They never got any recognition for it.
Right. They were on Donna the Prima Donna and Run Around Sue. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, all the major hits.
Mm-hmm.
And they were out performing around the country, and we would cross paths many times when I had my band. And they had been asking me for a few years if I'd like to join the group. Every time we'd meet, they'd ask again. And I wasn't ready to do that until about 1966, 67, somewhere around there. 66, I think. And their lead singer, I believe, left the group or for whatever reason. And I said, okay, I think it's time to try something new. So I did join the group. We joined forces. And started traveling around as the Del Satins featuring Johnny Maestro. And we didn't do any recording. But at that point, I think Blood, Sweat, and Tears were hot in Chicago. And we were just a vocal group with a guitarist and a drummer, so we were kind of wimpy, you know. Mm. So we decided, let's make this a big thing.
You need a horn section.
So we auditioned a few bands, local bands on Long Island. And found a band called the Rhythm Method, a seven-piece horn group. And we thought we complemented each other very well. So we approached them, and we had a meeting at our manager's office, and that's how we formed the group.
And it was a group with no name at the time.
Right. Well, that's how the name came about, too. We were there in the office and decided to form this 11-piece group. And someone in the office, don't recall who it was, made a comment that it would be easier to sell the Brooklyn Bridge than to sell a group of this size. And that's how the name came about.
The Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
Now, the worst that could happen came almost, or a little over, 10 years after your first recording session.
Right.
And I have to say that after that length of time, it seems, by listening to, that's one of my all-time favorite songs, by the way, The Worst That Could Happen, your voice is stronger than ever on that record.
Oh, thank you.
It's like you hadn't aged a day, you got younger vocally. And that I can't imagine anybody doing that song now that you, well, now, after you had done it, it hearing anybody else even attempt that record. I don't think anyone could hit those notes.
Thank you.
You chose the song, didn't you?
Excuse me?
You actually chose that particular, it was a Jimmy Webb song.
Yes, that's but, right.
And you you heard it.
Well, when we first signed with Buddha, at that time they were doing recordings, they were doing records like the Lemon Pipers and the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. Mm-hmm. It was what they called bubblegum music back then. And that's the type of songs that they gave us to record. And we did record them. We recorded two songs. We weren't very happy with them, but that's the type of music that they were promoting. So I approached Neil Bogart at the time, and I asked him, look, can we just do one more recording, and just so we have a choice of three? And they hadn't been ready to release the songs yet. So they said, okay, we'll put you in one more time, record the song, and then we'll see. So that's when I located the song, The Worst That Could Happen, and we put our arrangement. Went into the studio, did it, and they were floored. They said, this is it. This is what we're going to do. This is the style of music that you guys are best at, so let's do it.
And what a record. What a sound.
It was a great song.
It's very, just a really great song. You go from a huge band, an 11-piece band, eventually going back to a cappella again on in the mid-70s.
Well, no, we didn't go to a cappella. We eliminated some of the horns.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to change our style of music. But there were still vocals, and we still had a couple of horns. But the style of music changed. We were trying to get a little more contemporary. excuse me. But the vocals, as a matter of fact, it may have been the opposite. We were kind of burying the vocals a little bit and using more of an instrumental sound behind my lead vocal. And that didn't seem to work too well, though. But it was, about 1970 that we decided to make a change again. And as I said, not too successfully. But then the resurgence of this music started again in the 70s, and here we were back again doing the old songs. I didn't want to go back to doing the old songs. As a matter of fact, we stopped doing them for a while. And but there was so much of a demand for it, so we just started doing it again. And to our surprise, it started the career all over again.
In your live act today, how many old songs do you do? I mean, percentage wise, how do you work out your playlist for what you're going to perform?
Well, our show, most of the time when we perform our own concerts, we do almost an hour and a half, and I'd say 75-80% of the songs are the hits, are the old songs.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are, even the ones that were not recorded by us, we do songs like Lonely Teardrops, Jackie Wilson, and Unchained Melody. But we do arrangements, our own arrangements to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're accepted. So we try not to do anything new, anything contemporary. But when the people come to see us, I mean, they will come to see and hear what they know us for.
Right.
That's why they're there. They're there for the memories. And then I think no matter what style you play those songs in, they hear the records. They hear what they remember hearing. Mm-hmm. They want memories. That's what they want.
One of your best covers, I think is one of your best covers is You Gave Me Peace of Mind.
Oh, I love that song.
Which
yeah.
The Spaniels did long before, like 20 years before you cut it, right?
Oh, yes. Well, what we did on that album, that was a strict a cappella album. And we chose the songs and the groups that we loved. And we tried not to get away from their style and their sound. So we did it pretty much the way the groups did back then. So if you hear A Piece of Mind, it'll sound almost like the Spaniels. But, I mean, you can't compare me with Pookie. You know? He is so smooth.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love the way he sings.
Yep. Have you ever heard Gene Vincent do that song?
No,
he does a ballad rockabilly style of You Gave Me Peace of Mind. It's very interesting, completely different than Pookie, obviously, but doesn't try to compete with him, you know, just a completely different sound.
Yeah.
It's really very interesting.
We tried to stick to the record as closely as we could.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite on that a cappella album is the Flamingos. What was the name of that song?
I Only Have Eyes For You?
For You, yes. Mm. Yes. I love that song. Great song.
It is. To this day, one of our favorites. Do you have any of your old stuff?
Yes, I have every single one.
You have every single?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you keep them along the way, or did you have to track them down?
Had to track them down. Yeah, along the way, I was never interested in it. You know, I said, well, you know, I'll find them somewhere, and I don't need them right now. But yes, I did find them, and I have an entire collection.
Fantastic. The main reason why I wanted to talk to you, no, I'm just kidding, is, why haven't they tapped you to play a character on The Sopranos yet? That's what I want to know. If Frankie Valli can do it, you can do it, Johnny.
I don't know. I never even gave it a thought.
I know. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Well,
that was the main reason, right?
that's really all I wanted. This rest of the stuff, no, I'm just kidding.
I just saw Frankie, as a matter of fact.
Did you really?
He performed down in Florida at a place that we perform at quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see him, and we talked about old days. Mm-hmm. He's sounding pretty good.
Yeah.
I have so many stories about he lost his voice and this and that, but I was pleasantly surprised. He sounded very good.
Fantastic. Did you have any input on the making of this or the compiling of this brand new Shout Factory compilation?
No. Matter of fact, they approached me after the fact. I mean, not after they released it, after they had put it together before they were going to release it. And they just asked for my input as far as some comments. But I enjoyed it. They sent me a copy, and they did a good job.
Yeah. It's the only collection I've seen that covers really all the aspects of your career.
Mm.
It would have been, just between you and me, it would have been nice if they could have put Sweetest One to start off the set, just so you could have, you
right.
know, every aspect of your
career.
Well,
they may not have been able to get the rights to all of them.
Yeah. No, it's hard. Actually, it's hard to find. I had to dig long and hard to get Sweetest One, but
yeah.
Like I said, I do play it quite often.
We put together an album, a double album of... a lot of the Crest hits and Brooklyn Bridge hits, we redid all of them as close to the originals as possible. And this is an album that we sell and we bring to our performance, our shows.
Oh, so people can buy it right there at the show.
We do have Sweetest One and My Juanita, and Isn't It Amazing?
Mm-hmm. Bet you didn't put It Must Be Love on there, did you?
No. I had forgotten all about that.
I hope to talk to you again soon, Johnny.
Okay, Matt.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.